All right. Good evening, everyone. Let's begin. All right. So we find ourselves in Parshas Vayechi. So, in order to give a little bit of context to what it is that we're going to discuss tonight, we have to look at a series of psukim. Take a look at number one. The context is like this: Yaakov Avinu now has already come down to Mitzrayim in last week's parsha. The family is reunited for a little while until it becomes clear that Yaakov Avinu is older, already advanced in age, and is going to die. So Yaakov Avinu, you know, the Gemara brings down that Yaakov Avinu was the first person to daven for sickness before death. The Gemara relates that before Yaakov Avinu, interestingly enough, how would people die? They would sneeze, the Gemara says. Why sneezing? Because the same way that man was created, HaKadosh Baruch Hu breathed life into the nostrils of man. So originally a person would leave this world simply from the soul exiting the body through the nostrils as well. Yaakov Avinu davened for sickness. Sounds strange. Why daven for sickness? As a siman, as a sign that the end is approaching. Why is that necessary? So a person will have the advance warning to get their affairs in order before leaving this world. And therefore we see that it fits perfectly, because Yaakov Avinu, what does he do? He realizes that he's going to die shortly. So what does he do? He summons the entire family to his bedside, and it's there that he gives each one of his sons a custom tailored, a little bit of both, a little rebuke, and like a good parent, a little bit of rebuke, a little bit of bracha, and this is his final message. And amazingly enough, if you look at the psukim, it's quite dramatic, that as soon as Yaakov Avinu finishes giving the brachos and the rebuke to his children, what does he do? The Torah says he puts his feet on the bed, he closes his eyes, and he dies. Literally leaves with all of his incredible bracha, all of his affairs in order, his entire family around his bedside, an exceptional way to leave this world. So the Torah says over here that before Yaakov Avinu gives all of the brachos to his children, he has a specific private audience with Yosef. Number one, V'ato shnei banecha noldim lecha v'eretz Yisrael ad bo'i eilecha mitzrayim alihem. So he says to Yosef, the two sons that were born to you in Egypt, before I came to you in Mitzrayim, they are mine. They are mine. Lihem. Ephraim u'Menashe k'Ruvain v'Shimon yihiyuli. Ephraim and Menashe will be just like Ruvain and Shimon, i.e. they will be reckoned as independent tribes. Any children that you have from now on, which Yosef did not, but any children that you would have... Does everyone have a sheet? Good. No. Are there extras? Okay, thank you. Any children that you will have from now on, which Yosef does not, but any children were he to have from now on, will be what? Will be L'cho Yehiyu, will essentially be part of Ephraim and Menashe. Al Shem Achehem Yichgaru B'Nachal Osam. Okay, so here, amazingly enough, is where Yaakov Avinu tells Yosef, I am effectively making you the Bechor. Ruvain, remember, has abdicated his Bechor status because of the entire episode of moving his father's bed. Yosef becomes the Bechor. The Bechor, remember, is entitled to what? Is entitled to Pish Shnayim, a double portion. Yosef receives his double portion by, instead of Yosef being looked at as one tribe, Yosef now becomes two tribes of Menashe and Ephraim. Okay, number two, the Torah goes on. It's just a progression. V'ani bevoi mipadan, mesa alai Rachel be'eretz Kinan bederech ba'ot kivras aretz lavo efrasa. And as for me, when I came from Padan, Rachel died in the land of Kinan on the way. Ve'ekbereha sham baderech Efrat, he beis lochem. And I buried her there in Efrat on the way to Beit Lechem. Okay, that's number two. Number three, now skipping a couple of psukim. Vayikach Yosef es shneim es Ephraim b'mino mismol Yisrael, ves Menashe b'smolo mimin Yisrael, vayagish elav. So now at this point in time, after Yaakov has given the bracha to Yosef, so which is the psukim that I skipped in between Pasuk Zayin and Yud Gimel, this is where Yaakov Avinu blesses Yosef. Now it's time to bless the children. So what does Yosef do? Yosef calls it, remember, the introduction to this is Yaakov Avinu's sight is greatly diminished. So Yosef feels the need to help his father through this entire blessing process. So what does he do? He brings his two sons. He brings Ephraim. excuse me, he put Ephraim, who is the younger son, by the left hand of Yaakov, and Menashe, who is the older son, by the right hand of Yaakov, in an effort to prepare them to receive blessing from their grandfather. Vayishlach Yisrael es yimino, vayoshes arosh Ephraim b'hu atzair, ve'es smolo arosh Menashe, sikel es yodav ki Menashe habachor. So we're familiar with the entire episode here. Yaakov Inu crosses his hands and puts the right hand on the head of the younger child Ephraim, and his left hand on the head of the older son Menashe. Number 4, Vayar Yosef Kiyoshis Aviv Yadimino Arosh Ephraim Vayera Be'enov. Yosef sees what's happening over here, and the Torah actually records a very visceral response. Vayera Be'enov. It's not just that he said, hey, what's going on over here? It's bad in his eyes. It's bad in his eyes. Therefore, what does he do? Vayismoch Yad Aviv Lahasir Osome Arosh Ephraim Arosh Menashe. He actually takes his father's hands in an effort to lift up the right hand from the head of Ephraim and to put it on Menashe. Now Yosef assumes that his father is confused. He assumes that he's confused. He assumes that he can't see very clearly. So he must have just thought, he must have crossed his hands because he thought that Ephraim was standing, but Menashe was standing on the other side. He says, no, my father, you mixed up your hands. So Yaakov Inu says, now, Vayima'in means he refused. He refused. Because what does it mean he refused? Remember, the pasuk just told us that Yosef is trying to physically move his father's hands. Vayima'in means Yaakov Avinu refuses to physically budge. I know my son. Gam hu yihye la'am, v'gam hu yigdav ulam achi v'akoton yigdav mimenu v'zaru yemelo agoyim. The older son Menashe, he's going to be great. But the younger one, Ephraim, will surpass him and become even greater. Vayivarchim bayom ahu leimor, and Yaakov blessed them on that day, saying, B'chol yivarech Yisrael leimor. It is through you, right, or with you, the Jewish people will bless in the future, saying, Yisimcha Elokim ke Ephraim v'chimenashe. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should make you like Ephraim and Menashe, vayosem es Ephraim lifnei Menashe. And Yaakov Avinu places the younger son Ephraim before Menashe. And Rashi number 5 comments and says, what does this mean? B'chol yivarech Yisrael. What does it mean? With you, the Jewish people will bless. Haba levarech es banav. If someone wants to bless his children, what should he say? Yivarchim bibirkasam. You should use this blessing. V'yomar ish libno. A person should say to his child, Yisimcha Elokim ke Ephraim v'chimenashe. That Yaakov Avinu literally is saying over here, that if a parent ever wants to bless his sons or her sons in the future, this is the phraseology that is used. Ephraim and Menashe become the paradigm for all future blessing. So, when we look at this progression of Pesukim, right, numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, which are pretty much just the straight text of the Torah, we're left with two fundamental questions. Question number 1 is what? Question number 1 is number 2. Question number 1 is source number 2. What does that mean? Yaakov Avinu, remember, is blessing Yosef, is blessing his grandsons, and then in the middle of this entire conversation, what does he say? What does he say? Rachel Imenu. Rachel Imenu. Right? In the middle, again, Rachel Imenu is not nothing to do with what's going on over. He's blessing Yosef, he's blessing his grandsons. And just out of nowhere, he says to Yosef, and by the way, when I came back from Padan, Rachel died in the way, on the way, I bury her in Ephrat, outside of Beit Lechem, on the road. Now, what's even stranger about this is the fact that they've already discussed this. Right, this happens earlier in the parsha, where Yaakov Avinu makes Yosef take an oath that what? That he will bury him in the land of Canaan. And it's there that Yaakov says, and even though I didn't bury your mother in Marasa Machpela, I buried her on the way to Beit Lechem, I'm asking you to bury me in Marasa Machpela. But there, the context is understood. Rashi HaKadosh comments and he says that Yaakov felt awkward asking Yosef to do something for him that Yaakov didn't do for Yosef's own mother. That here, Yaakov buried Rachel on the side of the road. You know, it's not like today, Baruch Hashem, if you go to Kever Rachel. So Kever Rachel, you know, it's in the middle of everything. It's in the right, it's not like in the middle of nowhere. But remember, once upon a time, Kever Rachel is literally the middle of nowhere. the middle of nowhere. So Rashi says that Yaakov Avinu understands that maybe Yosef is a little resentful, that here he's asking Yosef, take me to Maaseh Machpelah, the patriarchal burial spot, and for my own mother, my father didn't do this. But over here, this has nothing to do with burial. Over here, this is totally about blessing. And yet Yaakov Avinu feels compelled to once again mention the death of Rachel and her anonymous burial place. Question number one is why. Question number two, which perhaps is our more far-reaching question, which I think is a real fundamental question. We do exactly like Rashi says, right? If a person has children, a person has sons, so Baruch Hashem, a person has the zechus every Shabbos night, to give this bracha. Yisimcha Elokim ke'efraim chemenashe. There's only one problem with the bracha, and that is, well, we don't cross our hands, that's true, right? It's a more fundamental problem, right? I apologize for the way this sounds. Who the heck are these guys? Right? Ephraim and Menashe. I mean, who are they? We don't know anything about them except the fact that they're Yosef's sons, Yaakov's grandsons, and that Yaakov said the younger one is going to become greater than the older one. Meaning, if we would bless our children and say that you should be like Avram and Yitzchak, that you should be like Yaakov and Yosef, that you should be like Reuven and Shimon, Baruch Hashem, David and Shlomo, we have no shortage of great people in our history. And yet we seem to pluck these two boys, and again, I'm sure they were great guys, but to the reader, we know absolutely nothing about them. And now suddenly, it's like fast track to greatness. Yaakov Avinu suddenly says, that what do we say? If we want to tell our children, what's the paradigm to aspire to? You should be like Ephraim and Menashe. And if your kids ask you, why? Why? What are you going to say? Because that's what it says in the Torah, right? That's always a good answer, right? Because that's what it says. So again, question number two, which is perhaps our more far-reaching question, which is why do these two young men, obscure young men, almost anonymous young men, we don't know anything about them. Remember, this is the first time and the last time we hear about Ephraim and Menashe. We don't know anything else about Ephraim and Menashe except that they stood in front of their grandfather and they watched the hands being switched right in front of them. And suddenly they become the paradigm for what it is that we want our children to become. How are we to understand the selection of these seemingly two anonymous personalities to become as the paradigmatic Jews that we hope our own children develop into? Okay, so let's address this. So there are a couple of approaches. If you take a look at number six, perhaps the most well-known approach, is found in a Sefer Igrei Dekalos. So it goes like this. So he writes, V'lama yisbaruchu b'nei Yisrael dafka bohem v'lo b'shar ha-shvatim. So our question, why are Menashe and Ephraim chosen and not Shimon and Levi? And not Yehuda and Zevulun? Why are they chosen? So listen to this. Yisod choshev b'musra yadus. One of the most important pillars that we have in our theology is never to lord over someone else, meaning never to feel superior to someone else, and never to, God forbid, feel jealous of someone else. In fact, we know this. It's why it's one of the Aseres HaDibros of Lo Sachmot, right? Not coveting. One of our theological pillars is that I believe that what I have is what I'm supposed to have. It's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu feels. This actually relates back very beautifully to Yaakov Avinu. If you remember, again, we actually spoke about this somewhat tangentially, but in the episode where Yaakov Avinu wrestles with the Ish. So the Torah says, Vayivaser Yaakov Levado, Yaakov's all alone. So Rashi points out, quoting the Gemara, why was he all alone? He crossed the family over Ma'avar Yabok, and he went back. Why did he go back? Rashi quotes the strange Gemara, Shachach Pachim Kitanim. He forgot... he forgot his Tupperware. You know, he forgot his Tupperware, and so he went back to retrieve the Tupperware. So everybody asked, Tupperware? I mean, like, okay, why are you going back? So the Gur Aryeh explains that Yaakov Avinu understood that everything he had was from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That God decides what we're supposed to have and what we're not supposed to have. That's the philosophical underpinning of Lo Sachma. Why shouldn't I covet? You have more than me, so why shouldn't I covet that? Because I'm not supposed to have it. It's not just the pshat that be happy with what you have and that's it. It's that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives each of us what we need in order to be successful in our life mission. And therefore, to covet what someone else has means to disregard that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given me. So therefore, part of the pillar is therefore never to be jealous of someone else. And also, if I happen to occupy a, we'll call it a higher station, to never chas v'shalom look down upon another person. So if I'm the guy lower on the totem pole, I shouldn't be jealous of one who is higher than me. And if I am quote-unquote higher, I should never look down on someone who is lower than me. See, right, the following. Kishe Yaakov ra, ki af al pi shebichar es Ephraim atzor lifnei Menashe abchor. Bechozos lo hisgoa Ephraim amenashe. So Yaakovinu sees something amazing. These two boys are there, right? Sibling rivalry is the most natural dynamic that exists within families. So now you have two, and especially in this family, there's a lot of sibling rivalry in this family. So now you have the two sons sitting there, and literally right there, Yaakov Avinu switches his hands and puts the right hand on the Bechor. Now there are two things that happen simultaneously. Ephraim is catapulted to a new position of prominence, and Menashe has now been what? Downgraded. And Yaakov Avinu sees this, and what does he see? Ephraim does not lord over his older brother, even though now he's been catapulted to this new position of prominence. And Menashe is not what? Is not jealous over his younger brother's newfound prominence either. Therefore, Amar Yaakov, Halavai v'chol b'nei Yisrael yiyu kacha. Halavai, this should become the model for all future generations. Mishlole gava v'kina. That for the rest of our national existence, we should always be free of any kind of jealousy or any kind of arrogance that we would exhibit over each other. Vayosem es Ephraim lifnei Menashe, hu eifa perush ala bracha, yisimcha elokim ke Ephraim chemenashe. Lochein, Yisbarchu Yisrael dafka bohem, shekmohem lotia kina, v'sachrus shoreres b'nehem. So they become the model. Why? Because Ephraim and Asher become the paradigm of two brothers with distinct roles and responsibilities, with distinct levels of prominence, but yet what? The ability to respect and coexist beautifully. So Yaakov Avinu says that this is how we bench our children. This is the bracha that we hope for our families as well. Because as a realization, not everybody is the same. You know, Judaism does not believe in the concept that all men are created equal. We do not believe in that concept. Not all people are equal. All people are special. All people are wonderful. All people are holy. But we're not all the same. We're not supposed to be the same. So some of us have positions of higher prominence. Some of us are just regular folks, right? Some of us will become great, and some of us will become just very, our influence will be exceptionally limited. The goal is to recognize that within the ranks of the Jewish people, there is role differentiation, and to accept that role differentiation without being jealous and without using an exalted role to lord over someone else. Well, where was the first time in our entire national story that we ever saw two people actually coexist? Because remember, this has not happened until now. It didn't happen with Yitzchak and Yishmael. It didn't happen with Yaakov and Esav. It certainly didn't happen with Yosef and his brothers. The first time that two brothers were given two different roles, the first time that two brothers were actively given two destinies, the first time, I'm sorry? Kind and Hevel, it didn't work right. It's gone bad every time until now. This is the first time where two brothers are being told that you're going to be greater, you're not going to be as great, but you're both special, bless you. And they both accept that newfound destiny without jealousy and without arrogance. Moshe Aaron is next. Is later. Now, afterwards, there will be other examples of it, but this is the first time it's actually happened. When Yaakov Avinu sees this unfolding right in front of his eyes, he says, "B'chol yivrech Yisrael." Right, this is how the Jewish people will bless their children. Yisim chalkim ke'efraim chem Menashe. There's only one problem with this approach, and it is, I'm sorry. Rachel and Leah were very good sisters. I feel like this is like a trick question, you know? So, right. Rachel and Leah were very good sisters, there's no question, except it's not so clear that there wasn't animosity between the two of them. We have the entire episode of the Dudaim, right, of the Dudaim, where although Rachel Yiminu did incredible Mesiras Nefesh, it's not so poshut that they coexisted peacefully. So, what's the problem with this word? Yes?
The problem of the order, that first he says that people are going to be blessed by them, and then we see the incident where he crosses his arms.
Oh, so let me just say a little bit differently, which is according, good, so no, it's right. According to this approach, the reason why Ephraim and Menashe become the model is because of the way they reacted after their selection. It still doesn't tell us why they were selected initially. So granted, if you accept the fact that they were selected for whatever reason they were, then the way they reacted to their newfound destiny further bolsters the choice. But we still don't know, why did you pluck these two boys out of obscurity to make them the model? Shkleach, they reacted incredibly to their designation. But how did you know to choose them? I guess you could say Yaakov, you know, Ruach HaKodesh is always the good default answer. Right? He had Ruach HaKodesh, he knew they were good. Okay, maybe, that's possible. But at the end of the day, it still doesn't answer our core question, which is why were these two boys, Yaakov knew that he was going to make them the paradigm even before they reacted the way that they did. So it still doesn't answer our question of why. Yes? Oh, so take good. So take a look at number 7. Good. So take a look at number 7. So Miyaznaim LaTorah Zalman Siraskin Zeichatadik Levracha brings down this exact concept, which is also another well-known concept. He says, Lo es Ephraim Menashe. So Yaakov Avinu sees Ephraim Menashe, and he says the following, B'nei HaMishnah Melech Mitzrayim. Now remember that Menashe and Ephraim are growing up in a household of privilege. Yosef HaTzadik is the second most powerful man in the civilized world. And when the second most powerful man in the civilized world is your father, so there are a lot of doors that are open to you. Asher Kolei Chalei Hamada Psuchim Lefneihem. Anything they want to do in life is open to them. Right? Remember, Egypt is the cradle of civilization at this point in time historically. The Pharaoh is the most powerful man in the civilized world. Yosef now has all this power. So any door that these two boys wanted open to them was open. Anything they wanted in the country, in the government, was open to them. And we have to assume they had many proposals for marriage as well, right? From probably very high-ranking officials. And despite the fact that every opportunity of greater Egyptian culture was open to them, Eitel Zakenam Begoshen. Yet how did they spend their days? They came to learn Torah with the Zeda. That's what they came to do every single day. They came to learn Torah with their grandfather. By the way, just as an aside, Rav Soloveitchik points out that the unique distinction of Yaakov Avinu is that Yaakov is the first real Jewish grandfather. That Yaakov Avinu is the first person to have true and ongoing, sustained, meaningful interaction with his grandchildren, right? Avraham didn't have it with Yaakov, right? Because Yaakov was young when Avraham Avinu died. Yitzchak doesn't have it with, really, we don't see anything with his grandchildren. Yaakov Avinu is the first one that we see a grandfather exerting an active influence over his grandchildren. So they're coming to learn with him every single day. How he writes, Begito, it's Begoshen, Begeto HaYehudi. Right? Where are they coming? So they have the whole great city, the whole great land of Egypt in front of them. But where are they going every day? They're going to the Jewish neighborhood in Goshen. And they have not become indifferent to their people. The kasher nigzera avodas parech alacheim he mitstarfin el tsaras v'saval klal yisrael. So we'll see this concept more in next week's parasha. And as soon as servitude begins to set in, as it does immediately following the death of Yaakov Avinu, the sons of Yosef, look, he reads on. He says, "Ve'elim holchim ala Mitzrayim lemar, anachnu noladnu b'Mitzrayim, ve'avinu hamishna hamelech hitzil as arz mirav, ve'heashir osa, ulefichach magios lanu, privilegios, privileges. Elehem mekablim aleim es ol hagolos v'hashibud yachal imachayim. As Omer Yaakov, halavai sheyichu b'nei Yisrael l'mofes es b'nei Yosef, shenodu b'mitzrayim, kibnei malach, I'm just going to read two more lines, es misirosam la'omen v'toroso, b'cho yivarech Yisrael le'mor, yisim chalkim k'raychim inasha, v'lones kaimu ha'brocha ko'av, ko'av es b'anav b'nusha. Okay, so Hazan Torah says like this, that as was mentioned, that here you have two boys that grow up in a very alien culture. And, you know, when you grow up in a culture among people that are very different than you, people have a natural desire to fit in. That's just human nature. We don't like to stand out. So here they are growing up in Egypt. They could have easily shed all trappings of their Abrahamic dynasty and fit very beautifully into Egypt and enjoy all of the opportunities that Egypt was going to offer them. And yet, they remained true to the Abrahamic values. And even when it was no longer easy to be part of the family of Yaakov Avinu, even when shibud, when slavery, when difficulty set in, they could have very easily excused themselves by saying, look, we're the children of Yosef. Yosef saved all of you from regional famine. Give us a ptur, give us an exemption from the backbreaking labor. They could have used that card, but they didn't. Instead, they chose to identify with their people, both in times of good as well as in times of difficulty. Now, the truth is, it's not a chiddush, because remember, the Medrash is a very powerful Medrash. The Medrash points out that the Medrash asks, why is it that Yosef HaTzadik was privileged to be buried in Eretz Yisrael, in Eretz Canaan, and Moshe Rabbeinu was not? Moshe Rabbeinu was not, right? Oh, so amazingly enough, the Medrash points out that when Moshe Rabbeinu saves the daughters of Yisro, so they identify Moshe as an Ish Mitzri because he looked like an Egyptian, and Moshe didn't correct them. Moshe didn't correct them. And when Yosef was in jail, when he tries to, right, when he's begging the butler who's going to be released from jail for help, he says, Ki gunav gunavti mi eretz ha'ivrim. He identifies himself as a man, as an Ivri. So we see that Yosef HaTzadik, no matter where he was, no matter what was going on,
Moshe wasn't born in the Eretz Yisrael.
Yeah, you know, that's so, I'm sorry?
Either was Yosef.
But Yosef at least lived there. Yosef lived there, right?
He was never there.
So the point over here is that we see this sense of identity that Yosef has that clearly trickled down to his own sons. So says Rav Sorotzkin, says the Aznaim LaTorah, that's what Yaakov Avinu was saying. And Yaakov Avinu saw these two boys. You know, all of his other grandchildren, all of his children, grew up in his home. Grew up in his home. They grew up in the shtetl. Okay, so they grew up in his home. They had all the beautiful values. But these two boys were born in a totally alien society and yet still so beautifully and so intensely identified with their Abrahamic values. Yaakov says, that's the paradigm. You see, also the important piece to realize is there is the Yaakov Avinu throughout Parshas Vayechi is haunted by the reality that when he dies, a dark chapter of Jewish existence is going to begin. So he realizes now that it's not going to become his own children that are the paradigms for Jewish survival. It's going to become Menashe and Ephraim. Because Menashe and Ephraim represent the Jew growing up and living in a hostile, an environment that is spiritually and theologically hostile to their beliefs. This is going to characterize much of Jewish existence. Therefore, Yaakov Avinu says, Becho Yivarech Yisrael. You, Menashe and Ephraim, become the paradigm. Why? Because you remain true to your Abrahamic values despite the theological and spiritual hostilities of society around you. You become the paradigm for all future generations. A beautiful insight. The only problem is, it doesn't answer the Rachel Imenu piece. It helps us understand why Yaakov now would have proactively selected Menashe and Ephraim to be the paradigm for how we bless our children, but it doesn't help us to understand why, number two, why Yaakov, in the middle of this whole section of Menashe and Ephraim, chooses to insert, or once again to revisit, the burial of Rachel Imenu, which then leads us to our last approach. Take a look at number eight. There's an amazing Targum Yonasan. Targum Yonasan writes, and this is quite astounding. He says, you could see the biography of Targum Yonasan over here. Targum Yonasan, like Onkelos, is not a translation, but rather it's a commentary. It's an Aramaic commentary. So look how he understands the pasuk. Uberechinun beyomahohu lemimar. Yaakov blessed them that day, saying, "Bicha Yosef Bri, Yevarchun Beis Yisrael Yas Yenuka." So let's translate these words. Says Hagam Yonasan, Yaakov Inu said, "It is through you, Yosef, my son, that the Jewish people will bless their children." Now, what is Hagam Yonasan saying? There seems to be a syntax issue with the pasuk. Meaning, if you go back, well, you don't have to go back, I'll read it to you. But if you take a look in number 4, once again, number 4, pasuk chaf, pasuk 20. So, listen to how the pasuk reads, and then let's figure out how it should be written. Vayivarechim bayomahu leimor. He blessed them on that day, saying, Bicho yivarech Yisrael. Through you the Jewish people will bless, leimor, saying, Yisrucha kim kifayichim inasha. Grammatically, how should that pasuk have been written? Vayivarechim bayomahu leimor. What should the next word have been? Bohem. Bohem or bachem, right? Bohem, Yaakov Avinu is saying that the Jewish people should bless their children with Ephraim and Menasha, plural. Plural. If that's the case that it's plural, then it should have said, Bohem Yivarech Yisrael. Through you, through Bohem, Bohem, whichever version you want to use, through you, plural, the Jewish people should bless their children. But it doesn't say that. What does it say? Bicha, singular. Says the Targum Yonah, something amazing. Yaakov Avinu is saying the following. Bicha Yivarech Yisrael. Who's the Bicha? Who's you? Yosef. Yosef. When people bless their children, we bless our children, said the Targum Yonasan, not to become like Menashe and Ephraim, but rather to become like Yosef. So what's the pshat? Okay. So now, to appreciate this approach, let's look at the Rachel Imenu piece. Right? Our first question. Why is it that in the middle of this whole discussion regarding Menashe and Ephraim, Yaakov Avinu once again has to bring up clearly something that bothers him a lot, the anonymous burial of Rachel Imenu? Why? Take a look at number 9. I'll tell you as an aside. And maybe it's because we're holding in this parsha. For the first time it hit me, and I had the zechus to be in Eretz Yisrael last week. So I daven shachar sama samach pela, and then just by the way the timing worked out, I went for mincha at Kever Rachel. And amazingly enough, when you go from Asamach Pela to Kever Rachel, you actually feel the isolation of Rachel Imenu. Because here you are at Asamach Pela, and you could daven by the Kever of Yaakov and Leah, and Avram and Sarah. Yitzchak and Rivka are, you know, only accessible during certain times of the year. But they're all there. They're all there. And then you get into a car and you drive a half hour by car, and Rachel Imenu is somewhere else. Okay, it's a very strange thing. It's a very strange dynamic, and you almost understand now the pain of Yaakov Avinu. Clearly, something that weighs on his mind. Everyone else has their final resting place where they're supposed to be Manasseh Machpelah, and Rachel Imenu is just in the middle of nowhere. So look at number 9. The Sfarno here says something amazing. Listen to this. Takef kishenasasi mi osam makom shahaya dvar hakel yisparach elai. So when I left Lavan's home, God spoke to me. God told me to leave Lavan's home. I was traveling back to Eretz Yisrael. Baodi baderech, I was still traveling. Terem higi lebeis lechem, and I didn't even manage to get to the actual city of Beis Lechem. And therefore I had to bury her. I had to bury your mother literally on the side of the road. On the side of the road. The Kol Kach, so now says the Sfarno, Yaakov Avinu explains himself to Yaakov, feels guilty. He feels guilty for this. You see, there's a major machlokis on Mefarshim as to why he did this. The Ramban, for example, says that there was a very utilitarian reason for this. The Ramban says because when a woman dies in childbirth, there's an incredible amount of loss of blood. That loss of blood leads to rapid decomposition. And had he taken her to Maaseh Machpelah, there would have been what's called Nivul Hames. There would have been a lack of dignity to her body. So the Ramban understands that Yaakov Avinu did the right thing. But if you look at the Yaakov Avinu response, he clearly feels terribly guilty about this. He feels that he did not do right by Rachel. So why not listen to this? Listen to what he, according to the Sfarno, what he says to Yosef. The Kol Kach Gavra Alai Tirdasi, the Avulasi, I was so overwhelmed by grief. I was so overwhelmed by pain. Shelo atzarti koach loholicha lebeis kvaros beis lachem. Yaakov says to Yosef, when your mother died, I was so overwhelmed by my mourning, by my pain, that I couldn't get it together to take her into Beis Lechem. Forget about Marsa Machpela, right? Beis Lechem was a major city. It had a cemetery there. It had a graveyard. I couldn't even get it together to bring her into Beis Lechem. The Ein Safek, ki me'az haya libi chalo bikirbi. And from the moment that your mother died, it's actually a very tragic lashon. I was hollow. I was hollow. I was never the same after the death of your mother. V'lo shalot od bi yetzahara. And now what he's saying over here, yetzahara doesn't mean yetzahara means, and I was never able to become passionate about anything again. Therefore, v'nechlasha ta'avasi, I didn't even have my natural desires and urges. V'lo nishar bi koach laholid banim. And I didn't even have a desire to father any additional children. Now, there are two parts that Yaakov Avinu is saying over here. The first part that he's saying over here is he's explaining why it is that he is counting Menashe and Ephraim as his own children. Because what in essence is he saying? I should have had them. These are the children I should have had. I should have had these additional children myself. But I couldn't. I couldn't. After the death of your mother, I wasn't a whole person. And I wasn't able to go on and to keep building the family. So Yosef, you did it for me. And therefore I will count your offspring as the offspring that I should have had. But there's something deeper that's unfolding over here. What Yaakov Avinu essentially is saying is, I was so overcome with my grief, says the Sfarno, that I couldn't do what needed to be done. Whatever, and fill in the blank, whatever what was needed, whether what was needed was getting her to a regular burial spot in Beit Lechem, or it was getting her to Marsa Machpela. The point is, I encountered difficult circumstances, and I buckled. I buckled. I wasn't able to get the job done in the midst of my grief, in the midst of my difficult circumstances. But Yaakov looks at his son and he says, Yosef, you're better than me. Why? Take a look at number 10. So remember, when Yosef names his children, so what does he name them? Vayikra Yosef Shem HaBachar Menashe, Ki Nashani Elokim Eskol Amali, Ve'eskol Beis Avi. Right, Yosef named his first son Menashe because God allowed me to forget all of my suffering and my father's home. The es shem hashini kara Ephraim, and he called his second son Ephraim. Why? Ki Ephrani Elokim be'eretz anyi, because God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. So Yaakov turns to Yosef and he says, Yosef, you're in a higher madriga than I am, because Yosef, when you encountered adversity, you didn't crumble. When you encountered difficulty, you didn't buckle. So life dealt you a very difficult hand. You're in the midst of terrible circumstances. What did you do? Kinashani Elokim Eskalamali. The pain of the past was holding you back. So what did you do? What did you do? You cut your ties to it. You let go of your past in order to go ahead and build a beautiful future. Ephraim, ki Ephrani Elokim be'eretz anyi, Mitzrayim was never Yosef's home. Remember, when does he have his sons? When does he have his sons? At what point in time? He's already what? He's already the viceroy, right? He's got a nice wife, Asnas. He's got a life of privilege. And yet, what does he call Egypt? The land of my affliction. Yosef HaTzadik. And this is, again, it's a lot of tragedy here. Yosef is never home. No matter how much prominence, no matter how much power, no matter how much accomplishment, Egypt is the land of his suffering. But despite the fact that Egypt is not home, despite the fact that Egypt is Eretz Anyi, what does he do? Ki Ephrani. Ephrani, Ephraim is really what Shoresh? Pre. He keeps on producing. He keeps on doing. So Yaakov looks at his beloved son, his Bechor from Rachel, and he says to him, Yosef, you're an astounding person. Because even when life was exceptionally difficult, you always kept moving. Even when your circumstances seem to simply be untraversable, when your circumstances seem to be overwhelming, you never buckled. See what's happening over here? So Yaakov Avinu, in the midst of giving the bracha to Yosef, goes ahead and brings up the episode with Rachel Imenu. Why? Why does he do it? Why does he do it? He's creating a contrast between himself and his son. You know, my son, when I was faced with difficult circumstances, I couldn't get it together. I was overwhelmed by the enormity of my pain. I was overwhelmed by the enormity of my loss. And I couldn't even bury your mother, my beloved wife, in the way that she should have been buried. But you, my son, look at what you are. No matter how much pain, no matter how much difficulty, no matter how much adversity you face, nothing brings you down. The pain of the past is tethering you to a turbulent and difficult of a past. You cut yourself away. You simply detach yourself from it and you begin to build. Egypt is the land of your suffering. It doesn't prevent you from yielding, from sowing pears, from creating fruits, from constantly accomplishing. But look what Yaakov says to his son. But Yosef, I have only one piece of advice. What does Yaakov Avinu do? He switches the order. He places Ephraim before Menashe. That what Yaakov Avinu says to Yosef is the secret in life is perpetual movement. That Menashe is important. You know what Menashe represents? Menashe represents contemplation. Menashe represents thinking about the past and trying to build the future. Menashe represents taking a step back and analyzing almost like the panoramic view of existence. So says Yaakov, if we're going to be successful in this next chapter of turbulent existence, Ephraim has to come before Menashe. There has to be constant movement. There has to be constant growth. There has to be constant accomplishment, no matter how difficult or how dire the circumstances. Should we contemplate our existence? Should we be Menashe? Absolutely. But first and foremost, we have to be Ephraim. So now we understand what the Targum Yonason was saying. So to loop this back to the beginning. The Targum Yonason said, remember, who are we really blessing our children to be like? Not like Ephraim and Menashe. We're blessing our children Becha. Becha, what did Targum Yonason say? Becha. Lemeimar Becha Yosef Berei. We bless our children not to be like Ephraim and Menashe for one simple reason. What's the simple reason? Right, remember my eloquent lashon beforehand. Who the heck are they? Right? We're not blessing our children to be like Menashe because we don't know who they are. We're blessing our children to be like Yosef.
Why did you say that?
Oh, because you want to know who Yosef is? Yosef is Menashe and Ephraim. The greatest picture, the greatest snap. Because who is Yosef? Who is Yosef? Yosef is the entire identity of Yosef. Is captured in the names that he has given his children. Yosef names his own sons, very interesting. Yosef names his sons, nothing to do with them. Yosef's sons are a reflection of his own life. So we bless our children not to be like Menashe and Ephraim. We bless our children to be like Yosef. And how do you become a Yosef? You have to be a Menashe. You have to be an Ephraim. You have to be the kind of person that doesn't buckle, no matter how difficult the circumstances. You have to be the kind of person that never yields, no matter how overwhelming the challenges may be. And not only that, but whereas Yosef was a Menashe and then Ephraim, Yaakov Avinu says for the future, we really have to be an Ephraim and then a Menashe. The first major thing that we bless our children, perpetual movement, that no matter what's happening in life, you always have to surge forward. You always have to keep going. You always have to get the job done. Do you have to take time for contemplation? Of course, but that contemplation ultimately comes afterwards. B'cha yivarech Yisrael, mor yisimcha Elokim ke'efayim chimenashe, is telling our children you should be a Yosef. But how do you become a Yosef? By actualizing the principles of an Ephraim and a Menashe. Amazingly enough, if you take a look at number 11, beforehand, I only quoted to you part of the Targum Yonasan. So the Targum Yonasan goes on, he says something amazing. So again, the Targum Yonasan says, we bless our children that they should be like Yosef. And when do we give this bracha to our children? Biyoma de Mahalusa. This blessing, the concept of giving it Friday night actually came along much, much later. Originally, when was this bracha given? It was given at a bris milah. A father or mother would give their child this bracha at the bris milah. Bris milah, of course, represents entering in to the covenant between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the moment that a little boy enters into the covenant, he is given his marching orders. And your marching orders are, you need to be a Yosef, not an Avram, not a Yitzchak, not even a Yaakov. You need to be a Yosef. And if you want to know how to be a Yosef, that's actualized in two parts. You have to be an Ephraim. Ki Ephrani Elokim Be'eretz Ani. You have to be willing, no matter how difficult your circumstances are. So many times, we find ourselves in our personal lands of affliction. No matter how difficult the circumstances are, you have to be successful. You have to yield fruit. You have to accomplish. You have to do. You have to be a Menashe. Ki Nashani Elokim Es Kalmali. Part of the very delicate dance of life is that sometimes there is baggage that weighs us down. And sometimes a person has to be courageous enough to say, the past is the past, and now it's time for me to move on. It's like an anchor that sits around your ankle that keeps you rooted in your past and your present. Sometimes you just have to cut your ties with it, and you have to move forward. The secret to being a Yosef is knowing how to be successful even in difficult circumstances. Ki Ephrani Elokim Be'eretz Ani. The secret to being a Yosef is knowing that sometimes you have to leave your past in the past in order to be able to build a beautiful future. So it's a radically new understanding. We don't, again, I say it again because I can't get over it. But we don't bless our children to be a Menashe and Ephraim because it doesn't add up that these two anonymous boys would be the paradigm for what we want for our own children. We want our children to be a Yosef. Because to be a Yosef means the ability to squeeze out successful results even from the most dire of circumstances. But let's conclude with this. There's one more amazing piece. Let's take a look at number 12. Rav Sarotskin writes again in the Oznaim LaTorah something beautiful. He says, B'choy v'orech Yisrael, B'vanecha lo ne'emar ela b'cha. Saying he quotes the same idea that we just saw before, that Yaakov Avinu was literally saying that in you the people will bless, not with your sons. Ha'adam hu hachinuch shu nosen labanav. If you want to know what a person really is at their core, look at the chinuch, the education they give to their children. Right? Ultimately, you could tell the true testament of the true essence of an individual could truly be seen by what they pass on to their children. V'im anu rotzim la'amod al ofyov shel adam, v'ladas es toch tocho. If you really want to know the insides, the kishkas of a person, aleinu liros ezo chinuch hu nosein labanav. What's the education? Not education like witty. What are the lessons? What are the life lessons that a person imparts to his or her children? Aleinu liros ezo v'kava Yaakov shekaasher yasimu bnei Yisrael leiv elachinuch. So Yaakov Inu says that when we pay attention to the education we give to our children, shenasan Yosef labanav b'mitzrayim hatmeya v'amalei kshafim v'zima v'tarbus elilus. Ve'ech Allah biyad Yosef legadol b'sriva kazu banim ne'emanim la'ashem otaraso. So amazingly enough, this loops back a little bit before, Yosef was able to raise these children, a Menashe and Ephraim, Imagine Ephraim, in the midst of, as you talked about before, a spiritually hostile environment. How is he able to do that? Yisparchu b'Yosef b'kishon achinu shelo b'cho yivarech Yisrael imor halavai im yavo nisayon kazeh shel Yosef liyadi v'eske legadol banin kifarechim nash. Something very important. If I want my children to be a Yosef, if I want my children to be Menashe and Ephraim, you know what the secret to success is? I have to be a Yosef myself. The only way to rear a Yosef is to be a Yosef. I can't inspire someone else to be a Yosef, Menashe and Ephraim if I myself do not embody those very values. So it turns out that according to this approach is something amazing. Therefore, when a parent gives this bracha to their child, there are two things that are happening over here. The parent is blessing the child, that the child yisim chalkim kefraim cheminasha, that the child should grow up to be a Yosef. And how do you become a Yosef? Through being a Menashe and Ephraim. But what is the parent doing at that very moment as well? The parent is giving themselves a bracha, that I should also be zocha to become a Yosef. Because the only way that I could hope to inspire the next generation to be a Yosef is if I am a Yosef myself. So what comes out from all these interpretations is something absolutely amazing. So now we understand, just to bring this all together, so we understand according to our first two approaches, why Yaakov Avinu chooses Menashe and Ephraim, according to the Igra Kala, the idea being that they're the first two brothers to receive that really dramatically different roles, and yet not be jealous and not lord over one another. That becomes the paradigm. Role differentiation is part and parcel of who and what we are, and we have to accept the different roles that each of us have, and never, chas v'shalom, use an exalted role to lord over someone else, or to feel inferior because I have less of a prominent role. We accept our roles with grace and with dignity. Second approach of the Aznaim HaTorah, these are the first two boys to ever grow up in a hostile, in a spiritually hostile environment, and yet still remain true to every single one of the Abrahamic values, especially as we enter into Sefer Shmos and the impending Shibud, this becomes the paradigm for future Jewish existence. But the last approach, which I think is the most profound and helps us understand the inclusion of Rachel Imino, is that Yaakov Imino is creating a contrast. Yosef, you know, there's no greater nachas for a parent. If there's one relationship in life where there's no jealousy when someone surpasses you, it's a parent and a child. You know, sometimes even in a marriage, right? If one spouse begins to eclipse the other, there could be some resentment there. With friends, there could certainly be some kind of, but when a parent sees that their child has just grown past them, it's not only is there not jealousy, but that's the ultimate nachas. That's the ultimate nachas. So Yaakov Avinu now on his deathbed. You know, when a person is old and a person is on their deathbed, they have a lot more time to review the past events in life. So Yaakov Avinu looks at his son, and what does he see? He sees, you're the man that I wasn't able to be. Because I had moments in life of terrible tragedy. Moments that caused me to rise to the occasion, and I couldn't. And one of the most hurtful moments was when your mother died. I couldn't get her into Beit Lechem. I couldn't get her into Maas Machpelah. Why am I telling you this, Yosef? Because I want you to know how proud I am that you have become the man that I couldn't. You have become a Menashe. You have become an Ephraim. You have become the person who is able to always be successful no matter what the circumstances. No matter how dire, nothing brings you to your knees. Therefore, Becha Yivarech Yisrael. In the future, whenever parents want to bless their children to become great, I give them the bracha that they should have a son just like mine. Just like I had a Yosef. So we bless our sons to become Yosefs as well. But what does it mean to become a Yosef? To be an Ephraim, to be a Menashe, to always move, to always produce, to always accomplish, to know when to let go of the past in order to build a beautiful future. And by giving our children that bracha, we ultimately bless ourselves as well. To become, because the only way, again, to rear a Yosef is ultimately to be a Yosef. And so Yaakov Avinu, as we close out this last parsha of Bereishis, really gives us the secret to success. You know, the Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu always creates the cure before he creates the sickness. So how amazing is it that as right next week we'll begin to learn all about the beginnings of Egyptian servitude in terribly dark times. And the truth is, it resonates with us because we're still in some of those dark times. And yet here, before all of the difficulty starts, Yaakov Avinu gives us the secret to success. If we want to succeed throughout all the vicissitudes, turbulence, and difficulties of life, it's quite simple. Yisimcha Elokim ke'efrayim Menashe. Our goal in life is to become Yosef. Our goal in life is to become Menashe and Ephraim identities. All right, I'll stop over here.